Welcome to Ask Peggy About Your Finances, because prosperity is so much more than money. Brought to you by writer, speaker, and certified financial planner, Peggy Dobiak.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 in Norman for production and studio assistance.
Hello, and welcome to the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. My name is Peggy Dobiak, and I'm a certified financial planner practitioner and a personal finance author. This is a show to help you understand your money, and I've got some great topics for the new year. First, we're going to talk about the state of the economy that President-elect Trump is going to inherit. Then we're going to talk about what Ponzi schemes are and what they aren't, and debunk something that's going around social media and the news right now. In the Plan Your Prosperity section, I'm going to talk about Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. And then finally, in Ask Peggy, we're going to look at how to fund your 2024 IRAs. It is not too late. So let's get started with the Bulls and Bears Market and Economic Update. This is for the week ending January 10th, 2025. And if you looked at the data on the surface, you might wonder, wow, what was the terrible news that happened? And the news wasn't terrible. The problem was, among other things, there's many things playing in the market right now, but the really big decline happened on the day that the jobs number came out remarkably good, better than anticipated, continuing, you know, a years-long streak of job growth and higher wages, really good jobs data, and the market just tanked. Why do markets tank in good job data? Because when jobs are good, the Federal Reserve is less likely to cut interest rates. And even though the Fed has made it very, very clear that they are not going to be cutting rates very much for a while, the market just is ignoring that. The market has just been totally ignoring that for, I don't know, a couple of years now. And so when the data came out suggesting that the Fed had absolutely no reason to cut rates, because the only two things that they're charged with is keeping unemployment low, which it is, it's crazy low, and controlling inflation. And contrary to popular belief, inflation today is actually very well managed. The problem is inflation was bad in 2022. And those prices don't typically go down very much. So prices are elevated, but not because of current inflation. So when the market saw that, it was in a really bad mood, and the Dow ended up a little over a point down. The S&P 500 was down about 0.7%. The NASDAQ was down about 0.6%. Gold jumped 2.44%. And oil, West Texas Intermediate Crude front month price, went up 3.38%. The dollar index went up about 0.6%. And the 10-year Treasury yield went up over 13%. Again, because it doesn't look like there's going to be rate cuts, and sometimes yields move in anticipation rather than on data. And Bitcoin dropped a little over 8%. Now, what I did find interesting is the VIX, the volatility index that we've just started following on the show, was up just a smidge under 9%, which means people are nervous about what's going on. I am sure that the fires played some of a role in this as well. Yes, there's an economic component to it, but there's also just a psychological component to it. And we have to expect that any time you have a terrible, terrible, terrible week, and my heart just goes out to the people in California, you just feel so helpless when you watch it on television and you can't do anything to fix it. I'm sure it's even worse when you're watching it live and you can't do anything to fix it. But that also added some of the instability to the market, because it was going up, it was going down, it was very volatile last week, which is one reason why the VIX increased. But hopefully things will settle out and smooth out. I wanted to talk today a little bit about the economy that President Joe Biden is leaving. And quite frankly, contrary to lots of opinions, the economic data from the Biden White House is outstanding. Okay, when you're looking at the unemployment numbers that are being inherited, what President-elect Trump is inheriting is better than anything since Richard Nixon in 1969. Mark Zandi, who's the chief economist at Moody's Analytics, said that Trump is inheriting an economy that is about as good as it ever gets. So everything economically is really sound right now. The unemployment numbers are good. The inflation is under control. Yes, oil is a little bit higher, but that is mostly a result of what is going on in the Middle East and oil being higher. You know, oil is one of those things. It goes up, it goes down, and it bases on a lot of things, most of them having absolutely nothing to do with the U.S. economy. Sometimes it does, usually it doesn't. And in this case, the fact that, you know, oil and gas were a little bit higher is more a function of what's going on globally than anything that's happening here. Now, that doesn't mean that people aren't still struggling with the prices that went up back in 2022. And yes, things are very expensive, more expensive than they've been. Again, that was a global situation, and the U.S. economy right now is the envy of the world. And I just say that because there's a lot of news out, that not so much news, opinion out there saying, oh, the economy's terrible. The data behind the economy is absolutely not terrible. Now, can they do anything to bring down the existing prices, which I think is what would make people feel better about this situation? I don't know what they could do, because once prices go up in an inflationary period, they just don't come down. And certainly adding tariffs or something like that is not going to help the situation. So we're just going to have to kind of wait and see what happens next. But to kind of counter a narrative, the economic data is good. And for where we are right now and going forward, there really isn't anything that could be done that would have made it any better. That is just simply economic data. That's not my opinion, but I do get upset when I hear people say things. It's just part and parcel not right. And so if you want to do research, this data is available all over. I am including the link to the article in MarketWatch, but MarketWatch does not have a corner on this data. This information has been a lot of places. So I'd encourage you to look it up and make your own decision.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the legislative update of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And I guess today I'm just doing debunking. So we can call this Debunking Monday because I have yet something else to talk about legislatively, sort of. I'm using it in this section because it was said by a legislator, and I'm going to let that person remain nameless for the sake of this show. I'm sure if you want to Google it, you can find it, but I'm not going to use the person's name. But a senator of the United States referred to Social Security as a Ponzi scheme. And that is totally and completely untrue. Let's start with the basics. Ponzi schemes are frauds. Okay, it is a fraud. It is always a deliberate effort to get money for yourself while borrowing from the people down the road. That is absolutely positively not what Social Security is. Social Security does depend on contributions to be able to provide benefits, but everyone gets the benefits. And there are people who are wanting to privatize Social Security. And to the best of my understanding of that term, it means that you would make your own investment decisions. It would kind of be like moving from a pension plan to a 401k plan. My big issue with that is I've seen what people do when they're given the ability to invest the money any way they want. And I am afraid that a lot of people, if they received a large sum of money to invest, would purchase, and I'm just going to call them sketchy investments, and I'm also going to leave that nameless, and that they would lose the money, and then they would be destitute. And we can't have the, you know, a third of the population of the United States living on the streets. So the government would have to do something to fix that situation. So I am not a fan of privatizing Social Security. I'm also not a fan of a flat benefit amount where it doesn't depend on anything. And quite frankly, I don't know how that helps the situation. There are ways to fix Social Security. There are ways of handling it that might not be super popular, but it would be fair. You could raise the retirement age, for example, the full retirement age, FRA, that goes along with when you get your whole benefit. Given that when Social Security was created, most people actually died before they were eligible to receive their benefits. And with longevity, retirement has now stretched out for decades when that didn't used to be the case. You could make an adjustment to Social Security, raise the age. I know people are going to be mad at me right now, but it would still work and it would keep the system solvent and it would be effective. The other thing you could do that would solve it in a day would be to require that people pay into the system on every dollar of earned income. Right now, it caps at a number. I believe it's a little less than $200,000. I didn't look it up before I was taping this. And any money you earn above that isn't taxed in the Social Security system. So if you were to make everybody, including millionaires and billionaires, tax all their earned income into the system, you would suddenly have solvency forever. But again, that is painful to the people who have more money, who don't want to lose it. And so as a result, I don't know whether that's going to happen or not. But my huge giant issue with this, in the same way as I get angry when people say the economy is terrible, I get even angrier when people call Social Security a fraud. Social Security is not a fraud. It is not a Ponzi scheme. It has a lot of issues. It has a lot of warts. And it needs a reasonable bipartisan solution to try to hammer some of those out. But Ponzi schemes are set up as frauds. Social Security is not a fraud. And if you're not sure, talk to your grandparents about it and see how much it helps. My aunt gets Social Security and a teacher's retirement. I think I told you last week. She paid into the system her entire working career, and now she is getting the benefit back from it. That is not a Ponzi scheme. I think at the age of 58, I also will get Social Security benefits. But if I don't, it's due to mismanagement, not that it was a fraud. So be critical. Say things need to be fixed. But saying things that are patently untrue, number one, it makes everybody go to their corner and they don't want to talk to you and they don't want to negotiate with you, which is exactly what needs to happen. And two, you scare a lot of people who just hear front of the headline news and they don't dig into it. And it's just not right. And I really think you should be critical of the things you don't like. But when you're being critical, tell the truth. And if you can't be critical and tell the truth, as my mother said, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the Plan Your Prosperity segment of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And January 20th celebrates Martin Luther King Day, a remarkable man who accomplished many things, but is probably best known for his speech, I Have a Dream. He delivered it in 1963, and next week we're going to celebrate both the man and his message. Dreaming is important. Much of our focus originates in the dreams that we have, getting a job, owning a home, or having a prosperous life. However, building a strategy for your money around dreams can be difficult. When implementing financial dreams, it's important to transform them into financial goals. What's the difference? While dreams can be vague, financial goals are very specific. To be achievable, you need to have a time horizon, a dollar amount, and an assumption of a reasonable rate of investment return. For example, you might tell me that you want to have enough money to retire early and travel. Just a few adjustments to this sentence can turn that dream into a great financial goal. First, what does retiring early mean? Retiring at 62, 60, 55? Once you have a specific number of years, you can create a savings schedule. I met with a young man once. He was 40 years old, and he wanted to retire when he was 50. He was actually adamant that he was going to retire at the age of 50. And it sounded impressive, but when I started looking at his financial data, he hadn't saved any money. When I showed him that to meet that goal, that dream, he would actually have to save more money than he earned every year for the next 10 years, then he had to rethink what he wanted to do. You cannot save more money than you earn and live. And so he had to think about it and become more specific and ground everything in fact. So rather than just striving for enough money, you need to look at your expenses. What are you spending today? To figure that out, track your cash flow for 2 or 3 months so you don't underestimate what you're going to need. What bills are non-discretionary? So non-discretionary are things like your rent, your mortgage, your car payment, your utilities. You don't have any discretion over whether or not you pay them. And what spending can you control? Be careful about ignoring or sharply limiting your discretionary spending as you're trying to create your retirement projection, because you're going to want to have spending money in retirement too. So if you shave down the dollar amount you need to the absolute bare minimum, you're not going to be able to live on it. Additionally, what expenses will be eliminated and what's going to increase? So you might pay off your mortgage, but you may have more healthcare costs. If we go back to that retirement example and you want to travel, the question becomes, how do you want to travel? Do you want to cruise once or twice a year and see the world? Or do you want to take your grandkids camping and fishing for a week at a local lake? The trips have wildly different price points, and you need to create a budget that accounts for that. So once you know your time horizon and you've got your best estimate for your expenses, then you need to look at your market return assumptions. You've got to create an asset allocation for your investments that takes into account both your risk tolerance level and your growth needs. If you create a risk tolerance level that is very conservative, and you actually need to grow at a moderate level, but you never do that last math equation to determine that, you're going to think you're on track because you've kind of done everything right. You're investing your money. You've created a risk tolerance. Everything is good, except your money isn't invested at a rate that allows you to meet your goals. You also want to be careful with what kinds of assumptions you make with your money. I know that there are some financial gurus who want you to be completely in the stock market. The problem with being completely in the stock market is if it goes south at exactly the wrong time, it hurts you a lot. So if you have all your investment portfolio in stocks, whether that's single stocks or funds, that portfolio is by definition aggressive. I know that some people are counterbalancing that with putting some money in cash somewhere else. Well, you know, that's great. And then you can say, oh, but your money's in the market. Yeah, but you've got a whole bunch of cash over here on the side. So you've got to take everything into account to figure out what your real risk tolerance level is, what you can live with, and whether or not that's going to be enough money. So we can create a really boring statement, not nearly as much fun as I want to travel. I want to retire early and see the world. But listen to this instead. Utilizing a moderate asset allocation, you can retire at 62 with an income level of 90% of your current income, allowing you to make an overseas trip every other year. Now, what's lovely about that is it's very, very specific. We all know the market can be volatile. Things can go south. You know, this isn't a guaranteed return conversation. You know that. But it is saying that if you take certain steps, your probability of getting there is much, much higher, because the term enough money doesn't have a meaning. You know, we talked a little bit about that with New Year's resolutions. Having enough, saving more money in the new year does not get you anywhere. You want to be careful on this example where it says an income level of 90%. You've got to know that that is, in fact, enough money to live. I will tell you, in practice, most of my clients spend as much in retirement as they spend while they're working. They just spend it on different things. So you want to be careful. So if you have dollar values and data and you apply those to your dreams, it may seem less glamorous, but it's going to give you the tools that you need to succeed. And once you know the steps you need to take, you can turn those dreams into reality.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the Ask Peggy segment of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And I want to report in on how my own New Year's resolutions are going. And I would invite you to go to my social media, my Facebook page, Peggy Doviak Author, and I'll do a post on this later today, and respond back and tell me how your New Year's resolutions are going. And I have to say that my goal of working for a specific time and then knowing that I'm done is working incredibly well for me. In fact, what I'm discovering is when I know I only have to work an hour, it's not that hard to do it. And because I know that at the end of the hour I'm done, I'm more likely to do a good job for the hour, and I'm more likely to actually work. And then I'm getting a tremendous amount more than I was getting accomplished, which is good because I have big plans for 2025 and I boxed myself into some bad deadlines. Related to that, it looks like 52 weeks to Fearless, What Creatives Need to Know About Money, should be released about March 1st. And when that's up for pre-order on Amazon, I will let you know. Also, I've just about finished the second cozy with my editor's notes. I'll be sending that back maybe tonight. And so I should have a publication date on that probably in 6 or 7 weeks would be my guess. We'll just kind of have to wait and find out. But I hope you're still on track on your New Year's resolutions. And if you're not, break them into smaller pieces. Only try to do a little bit every day and it will get easier. So I get a very common question, which is, Peggy, it's 2025. I didn't fully fund my IRA for 2024. What can I do to fix that? And the answer is you can still make contributions for 2024 through April 15th of 2025. So you can continue funding for the new year and count those contribution levels for last year. Remember, between your traditional IRA and your Roth, you can only put in a total of $7,000 or $8,000 if you're age 50 or over. So that doesn't mean you can put $7,000 in a traditional IRA and $7,000 in a Roth IRA. It means you split the money. So maybe you want to lower your current taxes a little bit, so you put $3,500 in your traditional IRA and you put the rest of it in your Roth. If you are an active participant in a company retirement plan, you have income phase outs where you can deduct your traditional IRA contribution. So you'll want to look that up on the IRS website or talk to your CPA or bookkeeper and find out what those phase out numbers are. It's actually a very easy Google search. But if you earn more than that and you're part of your company's retirement plan, you can't deduct your IRA contributions. Now, you can still make them, but they're not deductible. If you find yourself in this situation and you still want to fund a traditional IRA, maybe you also make too much money to fund a Roth, I recommend that you open another traditional IRA that you know you have to, that you've paid taxes on, because it's got a weird tax treatment. The basis, you know, the fact that it's not deductible gives you a basis to that IRA. The monster is if you have pre-tax money and after-tax non-deductible IRA contributions in the same account. It creates prorated distributions for the rest of your life, and it's an absolute nightmare. I don't tell people what to do on this show. You need to do what's best for you, but trust me, I am almost certain this is best for you. So you have your pre-tax IRA, the one that you've maybe funded for years. Maybe your income level has changed. You can't take the deductible IRA anymore. You still want to put the money in the account. Open a second IRA that is nothing but your after-tax money. You're going to be very glad when you have to take your required minimum distributions that you've organized it this way. If you're funding a Roth, it doesn't matter whether or not you're participating in your company's retirement plan. The only thing that controls your Roth contributions is how much money you're making. And if you're making too much money, the IRS isn't going to let you fund the Roth at all. Again, these are numbers that are very easy to Google. Remember that if you're still funding from last year, you're going to use the 2024 year income numbers. You're not going to be using the numbers for 2025. They will be slightly different. So all of that should make it easier for you to be able to continue to fund your Roth or your IRA this year. Then what you want to do for the next 12 months, or ideally the next 8 months, you want to divide the amount of the contribution by the month. And if you can, if you could have it fully funded by the end of the year, it's just easier than running 4 months late. There's nothing wrong with running 4 months late, but if you could have your 2025 funding done by the end of 2025, it makes the bookkeeping just a little bit easier so that when you're trying to organize 2026, you're not having to play catch up a second time. So take the amount of contribution, divide it by the number of months that you want to make the contribution for, and work it that way. It's going to make your financial life more organized, and the more organized your financial life is, the easier it's going to be for you to keep up with it. Remember, if you want to do a question to the show, you can go to askpeggy.com, that's askpeggy.com, and submit your question. I'd love to hear from you.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
You may submit personal finance questions to the Ask Peggy Facebook page and learn more at peggydoviak.com. And remember, prosperity is so much more than money.